What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and in today's episode, we're going to talk about a plethora of things. We're going to talk about the draft, obviously, but we got some Jordan Poole trade rumors, some veteran trade rumors that we're going to dive into. And who better to help me than my guy, Matt Moderno, coming on after a long hiatus on the show. Thank you so much for joining me today, Matt.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, Greg. I was happy to return the favor. You're always great about coming on whenever I ask you. So, anytime.
Always, always. I initially planned to start the episode with Matt by talking about options for six. I feel like I've talked about options for six for a month now since the lottery. But there's new reporting from Rafael Barlow, basically saying that it's worth noting around the league, there's growing belief that Jordan Poole could be moved either on draft night or later this summer, and a potential shakeup adds another layer to Washington's draft strategy and could open up a path to a new backcourt face for the Wizards. I have obviously thoughts on this. Wizards Twitter has kind of gone in at each other for the most part of the last day or so about it. But I'll let you get the floor first, Matt. What is your overall take on Rafael's reporting and on the Poole trade rumors themselves?
Is it Wizards Twitter's gone at each other for a couple of days, or Wizards Twitter and people who don't care about the Wizards but are enamored with Jordan Poole as an individual? I don't know. But anyway, I mean, Rafael is pretty well connected, man. So if he's saying it, I'm sure it's something he's heard. It doesn't mean anything. I saw also people taking something from the Athletic article about, their mock draft that showed the Wizards trading, meaning that the Wizards are definitely going to trade someone. These things get talked about, people hear about it anecdotally. So I would be shocked. I'd actually be disappointed if they're not having those kinds of conversations. It doesn't mean anything will ultimately happen. And I think just given where this front office is, it'd be more likely to happen if we didn't hear about it because they've kept their bigger moves pretty close to the vest. Like, I don't think anybody went into draft night expecting Denny, was immediately on the way out the door, 5 minutes beforehand. So I think they'll kick the tires. And if they get a great deal, probably anybody, on this roster is at least expendable for the right price. Obviously, the young guys less so than maybe some of the vets, but he makes a lot of money and he's probably not a part of their long-term future, just given age and role and things, that they've shown that they look for in their marquee guys that they're trying to build around. So at some point, if he becomes, a certain level of positive asset, you get something big enough back that really kicks your rebuild, into second gear, then I think, it's definitely a possibility. But also the nice part about him playing well this year is that you don't have to rush to do it either. So it's a good position to be in.
Yeah, I mean, well, so I find it fascinating how, like, outsiders, like you mentioned, think Jordan Poole was one of the worst players in the league. But also, contrary to that, Wizards fans also overvalue him, I think, a lot as well. You have your Poole stans. I know you know they come at you a lot. They come at me a lot if I say anything bad about them. So I try to refrain. But it's weird because the Wizards, typically under Dawkins, have kind of had their asking price and they don't like to move off of it. And sometimes it's to their detriment, right? Because Tyus Jones, they definitely wanted at least one first round pick, and no team was willing to do that. They got nothing for Landry Shamet. They got nothing for Malcolm Brogdon. So I foresee the Wizards possibly being, I want two ones. And I honestly, I don't know if Jordan Poole is worth that. He's coming off a great year, but I could also see a team like Orlando or Houston or whatever team's interested being, I'm not paying that. And the Wizards saying, okay, we'll hold on to him. And like you mentioned, it's interesting because he played so well last year that they can hold on to him. He's only 25. It's not like they're in any type of rush to move him. But like you mentioned, if the trade is there, and I mean, if you certainly get two first round picks, you move him. It's
It's
pretty
done,
easy.
yeah.
Where it gets murky is the one first round pick and then salary filler. And if you're looking at Poole, like, okay, he's not going to be on this roster in the future, then by all means, I'm okay with the trade. Another interesting note is I've seen a lot of people saying that he's eating minutes or taking minutes from a lot of the young guys. I don't know if you how you feel about that. I think it's kind of ridiculous to think that they need to move him so AJ Johnson can be your starting point guard. He's not even good like that yet, at least. I'm curious to know your thoughts on that perspective.
NBA players are human beings, and they're also not that good about being like low key about things at this point in this media culture. So if people didn't like Poole on the team, we'd hear about it. I think everything we've heard about him and his presence in the locker room has been to the contrary. So that's nice, one, that you don't have to worry about him off court, and he does seem to take a mentorship role, at least with a couple guys. He and Koulibaly seem pretty tight, so I think that's nice. Ultimately, like, how good are your young guys if they don't actually have to like earn those minutes? Like, let's clear out everyone that could reasonably compete in an NBA starting five and just throw them minutes without having to earn it. I think we've seen this organization do that with some young guys in the past, and it led to kind of a crazy locker room environment where guys weren't really realistic with their place in the league. And this particular group, I think that you want to see if one of them can beat out a Jordan Poole for, I'm not saying beat him out for all of his minutes, but eat into a bigger share of it or earn some more on ball reps. And I think the one question mark with him is his first year here, he was particularly unproductive, let's say, off the ball. I think as these guys grow, that's where he has to improve. And he is a young enough guy, he can still do that. It just hasn't looked that great so far. So he has to be more than just a ISO scorer, step back 3-point shooter, occasional driver. Like he has to be able to just get, not just like I threw an assist to a guy because he took two dribbles and then dunked, like really create a few easy looks for people, or at least be deferential enough that he can be, sort of a vacuum off ball and open the lane up for a Koulibaly who's going to drive or whatever the case may be. So I think just situationally, he's got to be able to take a back seat to some of these guys. And I don't think it's a thing he's reluctant to do thus far. But if that became a problem, I think that's the only thing that maybe, expedites their timeline of needing to make a move.
I love the point you made about if you really need to trade someone to open up minutes for your younger guys, then they're clearly just not there, and maybe you're not as confident in that in the fact that they could beat him out. Because eventually, you got to hope that maybe a guy like Bub can overtake Poole if Poole gets traded. But you can't just give Bub the keys if he isn't ready for it. You saw that in Detroit, like they had a bunch of young guys running around and pretty much not playing good basketball. And then you insert Tobias Harris and Schroeder and those guys, and then they're a playoff team. And yes, I understand they have Cade, right? And the Wizards don't have a Cade. But you can't just have all these young guys coming together and saying, well, we're rebuilding, we're going to suck, we might as well just only play the guys that are going to be here. You need some veterans to help them develop and play well. And I'll also mention, one of the things that a lot of people said is there's no way you get 2 first-round picks for a guy that's not an all-star. I mean,
Denny.
I just, I show you Denny Avdia, who hasn't sniffed an all-star game and got 2 first-round picks. Mikal Bridges, what was it, 4 firsts? He hasn't made an all-star game. And granted, he's very good. He's better than Poole, way better on defense. But certain teams have needs. I think the Orlando Magic make a lot of sense. That's a lot of the mock trades that I've seen in terms of very good on defense, but their offense is bad and they
Which
need
is why it
someone to
won't
step
be
in.
Orlando, by the way. Like, no, those things are never that telegraphed, I feel like, so.
It's never that easy. I mean, I've been in the trade machine. It's tough to work out. You got like Jonathan Isaac, Cole Anthony, and like Gary Harris, and maybe like 16. Like that's enticing enough for me to maybe consider that if I'm the Wizards. But again, there's a lot of options out there. Any parting thoughts about what a package could look like for you to accept for Poole?
I make no bones about, like, I don't think people should be on the trade machine unless they're actually good enough at it and prove some competency. I trust your instincts. I'm bad at that kind of stuff, so I'll refrain. I think the one thing I would point out, though, is that if they do move on from him, they're not going to take on longer bad salary beyond what he makes just to get, a second late first round pick or something like that. Because I think the time frame with which he has left on his deal is probably, where their owner is pushing them to try to start to be competitive again by. So are you going to take on a 4-year salary just to move Poole to get 2 firsts back? You know what I mean? Like to do the salary filler piece or take on bad salary just to get the other pick. So I think it's probably like more of a 1-for-1. They trade him out for some, maybe an expiring or maybe another guy with comparable salary or smaller pieces that eat up to his salary, lead up to his salary. And then my gut is it's probably 1 first-round pick is ultimately what you end up settling for and meet a team in the middle. And, it just depends on what that first round pick looks like. Or maybe there's a young guy with it that has some upside that you could talk yourself into it.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you make compelling points. Before we move on, if you had to give a percentage on how likely you think it is that he's dealt by draft night or on draft night, where are you at right now?
25%, I think, something like that. My gut is that this is probably the start of a conversation. And like you said, their asking price is probably high enough that nobody feels the pressure to have to do the deal right now. And then those teams, maybe they kind of circle back around with each other closer to the deadline, or somebody goes down with an injury and they need another guard, or, Dallas or somebody decides, like, okay, we really are lost without kind of a, a scoring guard here or something to
Sure.
that effect.
I will say before we move on, Nobody thought Danny Avdia would be traded. There was not even a peep before he got dealt. They keep everything close. So the fact that these rumors are out means nothing to me. Like anything can happen with this team. For all we know, they could trade Marcus Smart instead of him. I haven't heard too much reports today, but it wouldn't be surprising, like you mentioned. 25%, I think I'd probably be in that realm as well. Shifting gears more so to the draft now, and where I wanted to start this episode. You've heard me talk about options at six for a while now. Matt touched on it in his pod as well. But there's a lot of different options. I mean, my recent article for Bullets Forever, I had about nine players that I think could, I wouldn't be surprised if, depending on how the lottery or the draft goes, they are available or selected by the Wizards at six. I don't know if that's how many you have, but I think it's more so a couple guys that the Wizards are hoping to fall in. And there's the consensus top five. Like, I think if it doesn't go Harper or doesn't go Flag Harper, obviously that's quite shocking if Harper doesn't go too. And then it seems like a mismatch of like Edgecombe, Harper, or sorry, Edgecombe, Bailey, and Johnson, 3, 4, 5. And if it deviates from that, it gets real murky and a lot different. Out of those three that I mentioned, if there was somebody that falls to five, who would you prefer it to be?
Would I prefer it to be, or who do
Yeah,
I think
who would
is
you? Well, you
realistic?
can give me both if you want, but let's start with who you prefer.
Yeah, I'm in the tank for Trey Johnson. That's sort of been the guy I would have liked most to see end up in the Wizards range of this group. So that's probably the one I would still hope for. I'm not a particularly big VJ Edgecombe guy, which probably just guaranteed he ends up in the Hall of Fame someday, as I've said this now multiple places. But to me, he's just a little bit more, like, more things have to come together for him to have to reach, be able to reach this high upside thing. I was a little, I got to see both guys in person at the NCAA tournament this year. Johnson is bigger and shoots better and handles better, and VJ was a little underwhelming size-wise in person. The measurables sort of contradicted that a little bit. He measured okay, but it just doesn't really shoot it super well yet. Like, I think he'll be fine, but is it enough for teams that they're really gonna to guard him like he's an elite shooter, enough for him to capitalize on kind of limited ball handling? So can you only drive one direction? Does that work for you to a certain level? So we'll see what that really turns into for me, but I think Johnson's the guy I'd most like to see. VJ is probably the one of the ones likely to go ahead of the Wizards that I wouldn't be as excited about if he fell to them.
Sure. I mean, 20 points per game at Texas, right? 40% from three. It's hard to argue with that, right? I understand the defense might be something that people touch on. What would your response to be to somebody that says, yeah, he can score the ball, but I don't really like the way he buys into defense or plays defense, and I'd rather take a guy like VJ, who I think maybe projects as a better defender. What would you say in response to someone like that?
I mean, I would look at role and context, right? Like, you got a guy that basically is the entire offensive hub of an NCAA tournament team by himself as a freshman, with everybody knowing he was the go-to guy and with no shooting anywhere else on the court. And I just think that's probably not a reasonable expectation to expect a guy to go from high school, play more games in college, potentially at a higher level against tougher competition in an elite conference, and run an entire offense and have no spacing and get everybody to the NCAA tournament, on your own back essentially, and play high level defense. Like, it is just a different class of prospect. And I don't think any of the guys we're talking about here at this level are going to be complete. So it just, can he guard? I think he has reasonable positional size. I buy the passing enough to think he's more of an on-ball creator than just some off-ball guy who stands in the corner and shoots threes. If you don't buy that, you shouldn't take him, even in the top five, realistically. So I think he'll be a fine defender. I don't think he's ever going to be like a lockdown point of attack guy, but I always think, like, if you're not going to be a great defender, at least have decent positional size. So if they put him on ones, it's not like he's going to get like overwhelmed physically, and the strength thing doesn't bother me either. Like, VJ is going to have to add some strength there too to guard anybody, at the NBA level. So I would just, it's, there are questions on both sides. I just have less questions about Trey personally.
I mean, when I talk about Trey and I talk about how much I would prefer him to be the guy that falls to Washington at six as well, like I said, a lot of it is the defense, right? The Wizards want two-way guys. But the thing that I raise everybody is 30th in offensive efficiency and offensive rating last year were the Wizards, 27th in points per game. Like, you can't just get two-way guys every single time and still have competent offense and then have this unbelievable defense. Like, you sometimes need to get guys that might not be all-world defenders or project to be all-world defenders because you need someone who can just put the ball in the basket. And the Wizards lack someone that can do that. They lack a 1A, definitely, but they lack someone that can just score at will. I think Trey Johnson can score at will. He's, like you said, a guy that game plans projected at him every single game, and he still finds a way to score. So again, I'm in line with you on that, in terms of them falling. I'm curious what you think about Fears, because again, that's a defense concern, and not because he's like a liability, but he's a little small. He's a little slender for a guard. And then you also got 28% from three for a guy that I think projects to maybe be a high volume shooter in the league. What do you think of Fears, and what would your overall thoughts be if he falls to six and the Wizards end up getting him?
I don't, this is not an intentional pun. I don't have much fear about him being a bad defender because I just assume he's gonna be a bad defender. I think
Right.
Trey has better physical size, like better positional size and things like that. So I'm less worried about his. Whereas Fears was also just like a completely apathetic defender. But I think the same logic applies to him, even, exponentially to a higher degree, because you've got this dude that just reclassified. Just Google reclassified point guards, and there's like a graveyard of dudes that were top 15 recruits, that top 50 even recruits, some of them even dropping a little further down, and almost none of them do anything. And a lot of guys, it kind of kills their college career. They're dudes that were big time names that came in and never really figured it out. Whereas Fears, to an even a greater degree than I think with Johnson, like took a team to the NCAA tournament on the strength of his own ability to will them there. And you look at things like the Wizards need, like I don't know, one of the things that you want from a two-way player, right? Like it is the ability to switch and do all these things. But there's a guy on every team that's not a great defender. Like this is a totally extreme example, but like, if you look at most objective metrics for SGA so far in the playoffs, he's been terrible defensively, but he's an offensive engine, and they rotate in 12 other guys around him that can all just immediately pick up the slack. I'm not suggesting Fears is that guy, but I think it's okay to have a couple dudes on your roster that aren't all that guy. I think you should still have a team building philosophy of two-way guys as much as you can get them. But this is the difference between picking at two and picking at six. And if a guy can be in a walking paint touch for you, there's just value to that inherently. And I think that's a guy who could make life easier for all these other guys, for Keyshawn and Bilal and Alex, and they can pick up some of the slack for him defensively. And you can keep them on the court more because he's creating easy offense for guys like that. And I don't worry about the shooting at all. I mean, just a lot of it was shot selection, a lot of it was situation. He's got really good touch. He's an elite free throw shooter. Again, seen him in person as well, and you just watch him just like bury three after three before a game, and you're like, okay, this is not a thing. So if he's a 35% 3-point shooter like right away next year, that's obviously not great long term, but I'm expecting a pretty big jump forward from what he did this year.
I'm glad you mentioned the percentages, because something that I mentioned, and Ben Pfeiffer, when I had him on, brought this up as well. Anthony Edwards shot 28% at Georgia, and he just led the league in three-pointers made. So you can always develop, right? And I think Fears has shown that I like his shot. I love the way Trey Johnson shoots the ball as well. He made a lot more threes, or at least a better percentage of them, but I still buy the long-term outlook of Fears. And I read something interesting yesterday that when you're drafting guards, you need to kind of draft them and project what they will look like in 4 or 5 years, not kind of what you're getting now. And the Wizards have the ability to do so. I mean, they're not the team that's like, okay, we need to pick you, plug and play, we're contending. They have plenty of time. And there's definitely more polished prospects in the draft. But again, I think these guys are high upside guys. And like you mentioned, at six, you can't always have great defense, great offense. Like, you're going to get them maybe in the top two or three in most drafts. At six, you kind of got to be, say, you know what? I really like what you can do on one side of the ball, and I think that I can help you on the other side, and vice versa.
Just on that real quick, Rick, like I haven't heard a single Wizards fan, like Bub might have the highest approval rating of any rookie guard we've had for a while that
Yeah.
wasn't actually like all that good at NBA basketball this year. I don't remember this like big concern about his shooting, and I think he ended up being a, like we the guy we saw this year. I think everybody expects to project as a pretty good 3-point shooter longer term, but that was a guy that on good volume was a 32% college 3-point shooter. So it's not like young freshman guards who are growing physically can't take a leap forward. So I just want to back you up there.
Yeah, for sure. And we touched on the guys that I think I wouldn't be surprised if they were the pick. I think that's kind of the outlook of it right now, depending on shakeups and trades and all that. The next kind of batch of prospects in that range are, I think, a little bit more polarizing, I'd say. Like, I've seen people have fears at 18. Like, I've seen the deviation, but for the most part, I think that's kind of where I've seen in that top six or seven. The next couple guys, your Derek Queens and your Kaman Malawaks, for the better part, are more polarizing. And I think a lot of the debate has been based on fit. You know, does Malawak fit next to Sar as like a Twin Towers thing? Or does Derek Queen fit better next to Sar as a what you can't do, I can do, and vice versa? What's your outlook on that with the BPA versus fit thing? Are you more so looking at, okay, well, if it's between Malawak and Queen, I like this fit better than this fit, or are you just saying, I think Derek Queen or Malawak's the better player and that's who I'm going with?
Yes, to both. I think I have like a hybrid approach to this. It's
Sure.
more along the lines of like, yeah, you want a guy who's the most talented, but he also has to have a pathway to minutes and a role that sets him up to grow into the best player, you know, he's ultimately going to be. I don't particularly see Malawach or Sar, but being able to like both blossom the way you would want them to blossom if they have to share that much court time together. But ultimately, again, they need talent. So if you think you can get a healthier version of like Mark Williams and lock up, you know, your defensive center for a while, great. Just I'm not as high. I do like him as a player. I'm not as high on that archetype player for every reason you've just seen from this NBA playoffs. Like these teams have been at their best when they have an ability to go five out. And you know, I know there's like a clip of him hitting a couple threes in a workout, but we saw that with Walker Kessler before the draft. We saw that with Mark Williams before the draft. Like Derek Lively's not an elite three. You know what I mean? Like they're all these guys have a certain amount of touch and they can hit a wide open three, but are they going to do it in game time at game speed? I just don't project him to ever shoot. So I'm not there yet on like Sar is guaranteed to be some elite stretch big. So locking yourself into a situation where they're both probably best at the five, I don't really know how they fully develop. And I have similar concerns about Queen just for slightly different reasons. I am a Maryland homer through and through, so I want to see him be successful, but I also tend to usually not rate Maryland prospects particularly high because I maybe overwatch them when you see every minute somebody plays. But you know, he shot better as the year went on. He's had to retool his jumper a couple times in the last 3 years, which is not ideal. He's obviously got great touch around the rim, so he'll probably shoot it at some point. But if he doesn't, that becomes really tough. And he's a good rebounder, you know, and I think he maybe would have had better rebounding numbers if he wasn't playing next to a Julian Reese this year. So maybe he's a little better than numbers look. But I think that's something you would want. To me, Sar's best with a physical rebounding stretch four, and you let Sar be the five, and that's how you close playoff games. To me, that's not really Derek Queen. So if they're both going to be best next to that same archetype of player, you know, how well are they able to grow either? So I would probably steer away from both guys at six, and then you hope one of them or an Asa Newell drops to 18. So long-winded
Yeah,
answer, sorry.
physical stretch five rebounding big sounds like a lot of the guys that I was going to talk about in that 18 range. So we'll get to that in a second. But I like what you said about the fit versus BPA in terms of like if this guy doesn't project as like I can play him alongside a guy like Sar, especially in the front court. You just drafted him second overall. Like you should be considering how they fit with him because you should be, you know, projecting your future as this guy, whether you want to play him at the four or the five. You don't necessarily want to draft someone that you just don't foresee really meshing with him, especially in that starting five in the same lineup to close games. And so with Malawak, I can't get there. I get there more so for a guy like Queen. But that's why I am in my approach, I think You have tiers, right? Like a lot of your big boards and draft boards, you kind of have separating prospects based on tiers. I think if they're pretty close in the same tier and you kind of got one at 8, one at 9, or one at 8, one at 10, and they're in the same tier, but the fit for one is just so much better and trumps the other, then sure, I can get behind where you're going with that. I'm typically a BPA guy. Like again, this is a team that needs talent. I've seen countless DMs on Twitter and people mentioning me saying, Greg, why would they take Trey Johnson or Jeremiah Fears? They have Jordan Poole. And I have to break the bad news to
And
him
AJ
that
Johnson and
and
Bum, and
AJ
it's like,
Johnson,
are we
like,
sure they're good at basketball?
well, for AJ, he didn't show. I feel like a lot of people think AJ Johnson's this unbelievable prospect. I think it was a good trade from the Wizards. I think they want it. But again, AJ Johnson is not a guy that you say, I'm not drafting a guard because I have him. Bob Carrington, I thought was good last year, but again, that's not a guy where you say, I think I have my point guard of the future. Certainly not for Poole, 25, older than a lot of the prospects they've drafted, and again, on a big contract. So again, those are like the three guards that maybe will be here for the future. And then when I on my last pod, I got about to about three forwards, and I got Tsar in the front court. Like they have holes everywhere, and even if you don't think they have a hole, they probably do because you're overrating that player on the team. So I think in this situation, they're not a Philadelphia. Like you can't just draft plug and play guys. You need talent wherever you can get it, and that's kind of why I'm at where I'm at with that.
Just last thing, maybe to add on to that, if you don't mind, Greg, like I've seen that same comment of like they can't take another guard, they have a guard, which you just look at OKC closing a game with Caruso, Dort, SGA, insert fourth guard essentially,
Cason
and
Wallace.
yeah, while like I mean, how many centers are they essentially playing, right? Like it's Holmgren and Hartenstein, and that's kind of it. And then you've got Jalen Williams essentially playing a small ball big for some portion of the game. And I think you can make the same argument that that's really what they're benefiting from in Indiana too, is being able to put Turner at the five, let him space the floor, and Toppin's playing some small ball five and things like that. So it's not. Siakam is essentially like a wing that can be a pseudo big if he needs to. So I think realistically, it's just the percentage of roster spots that should go to more dynamic players that can play at the end of playoff games makes more sense to me. How many centers do you ultimately need to close a game?
Certainly, I think they might be scarred from the three guard lineups of like Beal, Ish, and Neto from a couple years ago. Like
Yeah.
that's not. I hope that's not the case, because
That's
they're
not a
not
three-guard
drafting.
lineup, man, because Neto was a true small forward. So,
I was watching those games. I can't believe they Scott Brooks got away with running those. It works sometimes too. Like it does sometimes benefit a team when you can play small and you can run, and that's kind of what they were doing. They were saying we're not playing defense like at all, so we might as well just play good offense. And I'm not saying that the Wizards want to do that. They don't. But again, you got to draft the best. Like you can't pick and choose based on who you think can plug in here because there's holes everywhere. So I'm glad we're aligned in that. And now, obviously, there's a lot of players that could be drafted at six. And I think we touched on a lot of them. We didn't touch on Khan too much. But is there like a wild card that you think, okay, I could see the Wizards drafting him, and then is there one that like you would be fine with drafting at six that we didn't touch on yet? I know you're high on some other guys too, but
That's a good one. I had not thought about that. Let me see what I got on the old draft board here. I like Yegor. I don't
I
know.
figured, yeah.
Just sort of that's sort of how I roll. I do like Khan a lot. I've said this a bunch of times too. I really hope the Wizards don't take him because Wizards Twitter will just literally complain until the end of time. Even if he makes all-star teams, it'll somehow
Sure.
just be a thing we nitpick. I really like Asa Newell. From Georgia. So six is maybe a little rich, but if you could drop back a couple and still get a guy like that, he's actually my favorite of the bigs in this draft. So I wouldn't be totally opposed to, seeing them drop the 10 or something and still get a guy like that for some extra capital, maybe next year's draft.
Yeah, I mean, a hot take here. Like, I think Wizards Twitter, like you said, would melt down if they took Khan. He's the sixth best prospect on my board. I think he's going to be a really good NBA player. He might not be the flashy pick, like he might not be star hunting per se, but I wouldn't be that mad. Like I could get behind them taking the guy that they think is the best player there, and it's not the flashiest pick. He's not going to be a 1A option. Might not be a 1B, But I could get behind that. Could you get behind Khan, or are you more so? I think they should draft for a shoot a little higher at six.
I really like him, so you're probably talking to the wrong person or the right person, depending on somebody's perspective listening to this, I guess. I think he'll be the best shooter in the draft. Like, I'm not worried about that. He shoots really
Same.
well off movement for a guy that people don't expect to shoot really well off movement, I think, too. Finishes well around the rim. I think anybody who does the he's just Corey Kispert thing should have their basketball talking license revoked, because it's just not that, right? Like, he's a much more adept playmaker for himself and for others. I think you saw that in the ACC tournament. When Flagg went down, he went supernova. Like, the guy could take over games, and he's not a dynamic athlete. And I think that's almost less important now in the NBA than it's ever been. There's so much space. Like, he's gonna have driving lanes. He can drive from either side. I think things like that, pace is more important. I wish the handle were like a tiny bit tighter, and maybe I'd buy into the upside even a little bit more. The longer I do this, the more I'm convinced that it's just really hard to be an elite player if you don't have like an elite handle. And that also seems to be the thing that maybe develops the least amount for guys over the course of their career. So, like, guys sharpen it up a little bit and are better in certain situations. So I think he's a good enough ball handler and driver from either side that I think that's a good sign. And I've said this on our pod a couple times, Greg, but like, when I got to see him in person, I thought he was a really bad defender. He was hand checking the entire time. It was at Cameron, so nobody called it. He's just getting away with the Duke stuff at Duke. But over the course of the year, he got so much better. And John Shire talked about it on their Duke Blue Plan or their Brotherhood podcast about how by the end of the year, Khan was actually graded out as their best perimeter defender. And the response back I got to that from some folks is, well, of course he'll say that he wants his guy to get drafted. Well, he has four other guys in this draft. He also wants to get drafted highly. So staking your reputation on someone's defense if they don't really think they're going to be a good defender doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
For sure. The comps to Corey Kispert just kind of lazy, like white boy that can shoot. You don't think he's going to be good on defense because he might not be the most athletic. But like he created his own shot. He's not just like a catch and shoot, stand in the corner guy. Again, I would take other players over him. Like I have Fears right behind him, but I could be convinced again to take a guy like Fears with the upside at six. But again, I wouldn't be too frustrated with that. There's also the possibility of a trade up. There's a possibility of a trade back. From what I read today, like it's been a pretty quiet recently about trade up, trade back. I think you kind of start to see that heat up towards the draft. There's everything that could unfold with Kevin Durant and how, the fallout from something like that. I'm gonna allow you to play GM real quick. I'm gonna allow you to be Will Dawkins. And I'm gonna just give you a trade back scenario. I've been talking about this on my pod, and this has been something that a lot of people have liked for the most part. I try not to be too flashy with the trades because, like you mentioned, I'm not a GM. I don't know what I'm doing. But based on reports, like Brooklyn loves Jeremiah Fears. That seems like a good match in terms of fit and in terms of upside as well for them to get a lead guard. If they really wanted him and they said, "Hey, Matt," I guess Will in this scenario, "here's 8 and here's 19, and I want to jump 2 spots for 6." Are you accepting that? Are you renegotiating for a better deal? What's your outlook on something like that?
I got to do the mental math here. Say it for me one more time, Craig.
It's 6 going to Brooklyn in exchange for 8 and 19.
Yeah, I'd do that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even think twice about
Thank
it.
you. Easily. Now they have 26 and 27 as well. So let's say instead of 19, they throw you 26. Are you still enticed enough to move back 2 spots, possibly pass up and miss the guy that you really want?
I think it's a move you don't make until that point in the draft,
For
and
sure,
you've
for
got to
sure.
be like really solid that someone you don't like is gonna fall there. And I'm also a firm believer in, like, if you've got your guy, go get your guy, and don't let like 2 spots throw you off or something like that. But if you're truly not sold on one of these guys being a big needle mover for you, and I think the Wizards are in a position where they do need as many swings as possible here, I'd consider it. And then maybe having even 25 and 18 gives you a chance to move back up again, or something, to be a little more aggressive later, or even defer some assets the next year. Yeah, I think it should be strongly in consideration, and they would be silly to not at least kick the tires on something like that.
Yeah. I agree. I'm there with you. Like 26, 27, I would not take it. Like I'm at that point, I have 18 as well. I'm gonna go get the guy that I want at six. It's different than Bilal, right? Like the Wizards traded 2 second round picks to move up because Indiana knew that they didn't really want Bilal that high. The Wizards would take him and they could just get Jairus Walker. Whereas the Wizards know that they don't want Fears. They know Brooklyn's moving up for him, but it's still the risk at seven where the Pelicans could take. Maybe they really like Yegor Demin, but the Pelicans like him. Or they like Queen, the Pelicans like him. It's a bunch of different things. And to take that risk, I think I'd need 19 to be enticed. And then you could package 18, 19. You could do a lot of other things. You could keep them both. You could do a lot of other stuff. But I think that's a lot easier to trade back. I think those deals make sense. I've seen some floating with Houston at 10. Possibly that maybe that's like as far as I think they'd possibly want to move back is 10. I think that'd be a little too rich for a team that needs talent. Unless they're blown away. But I guess here's the other side of it is a trade up. Realistically, I don't foresee a Charlotte trade up. I think the Hornets really want whoever falls to them at four. Utah as well. Like why they need to get their guy at five. If you're Washington, three has been the most talked about, right? How can they get up to three? A lot of people want to do it for Ace Bailey. For me, I do it for Trey Johnson. I think you would as well. So I think this move might test how much you really like Trey Johnson, because obviously you're going to make it knowing that he won't be there at six, and you're like, well, we really want this guy. We're going to move up. I'd experimented with putting Paul George in here, but absolutely not. I'm not taking back his contract. I'm killing those rumors. That's not happening. So here's the proposed offer: the Wizards get the third pick in exchange for 6 and 40 in this draft. The 26 first round pick, worst of a couple teams that they got from the Jared Butler trade. So it's the worst of OKC, Houston, and LAC. Going to be a really late first rounder next year. And Phoenix's 2026 pick swap in exchange for three. And before you note, I think the pick swap's important here because there's no way, in my opinion, the Wizards use it. Like, I think Phoenix might be bad after a Kevin Durant trade, but they're going to extend Devin Booker. They probably can trade Beal. And I think overall, the Wizards are going to try to keep that top eight protected pick. And that way, they'll be worse and won't use it versus Philadelphia. It's a lot more enticing because I think they'll definitely use it and they can move up 10, 12 spots. So I think that's a cool little piece where it's worth nothing to maybe Washington, but a lot to Philadelphia. Is that a move you're accepting?
I think the asking price to get from three to six is maybe bigger than that gives
Sure.
it credit for. So I think they would have to put in more stuff to make that happen, and that's probably more than I'd be willing to give up, just because I'm not as big on the difference between who's there at three. Like, Wizards Twitter overall loves, Ace Bailey enough that I think most of them would do that if it gave them a chance. For me, I'd rather have the more opportunities, and just the track record that this front office seems to have so far is guys that look like projected impact players. So giving them more opportunities to do that is better to me than just slightly moving up. I think from their perspective, though, if you're sold on Ace or Trey or one of these guys, and that's the way to get them, I wouldn't be shocked if they do it. But the trading up into the top three thing, it really, as much as like we as fans sort of project those things out, it doesn't really happen all that much. And when it does, the asking price is pretty steep. So I.
Sure. Yeah, it's a fair point. Like I said before, it depends how much you really like that prospect.
You got to be
For me
all in, I
again,
think.
like I don't think that they are that good. Those, three, four, five prospects. Maybe, I'd be willing to go up to get Dylan Harper. I wouldn't be willing to give up a law that's been talked about. I wouldn't be willing to do that. But again, like you mentioned, the asking price is going to be a lot. So you have to really like those prospects. And for me, I don't like them at that much. And I'd rather just sit at six, keep 18, keep 40, and take those guys. Like you mentioned, the Wizards need like as many darts to throw at the board as possible. Try to hit a bullseye. It's harder to do when you have 6 and 18 versus when you have like two in a really good draft or three in a really good draft. But I think I'm aligned with you in that. I think it's, it depends what Philly wants to do as well. Like if Philly likes Khan and they know that they can get him at six, maybe that asking price is lowered. Maybe the Wizards try to call their bluff. It all depends on the assets that they want for sure. So obviously we've talked all about six. They also have 18. You mentioned a lot of those, rebounding, possible stretch bigs, physical bigs. I think there's a lot projected in this range. Is there anybody that you've kind of fallen in love with in this range, or anybody that projects in this range that you're saying, okay, if he is on the board, the Wizards need to draft him?
Been a little higher than consensus consistently on Rashear Fleming. I think that's interesting to me as a guy with big size but wing mobility. If you really buy the shooting, which there's some questions there, right? Like he didn't shoot for his first 2 years. All of a sudden he shoots this year. That's something to it. I think he makes sense. He'd give you kind of a versatile, playoff caliber lineup from an aesthetic standpoint. Like he looks the part of what's been, used as a four in the NBA playoffs. So I think that's a name I'd be interested in. I mentioned liking Newell from Georgia. I've seen some stuff that'll have him seven on a mock draft and some stuff that'll have him 22 on a mock draft. So I think that probably puts him, firmly in that range, which is fair. I'm not big on like a Colin Murray Boyles or something like that, but that's probably a guy that goes about that range of the draft that is a physical rebounding guy. I really like Thomas Sorber, but I don't really know that I buy him as a shooter. And to me, that probably projects him as mostly a backup then. I'd maybe want slightly higher upside, at this point in the draft. But hey, if you can lock him down and let him be a mobile, like long defensive big, I think there's some value to that too. So those are probably the guys I would look at most. And then I think realistically, you could probably get a wing somewhere in this range. A Liam McNeely, a Will Riley, is probably somewhere in this. Cedric Coward seems like he might go before that at this point. So Nick Clifford, one of those kind of guys would be interesting to me. I always like the idea of taking a wing in the draft just because they're harder to get them and you need a good amount of them. So I'd be more interested in that than like a small point guard, like a Jace Richardson or one of those kind of
For
guys.
sure. Yeah, I'm lower on Jace than I think a lot of people. And I've seen him pretty high. I've seen him, outside in that late first round. I want to talk about Neek in a second, because the age thing is definitely something I've seen talked about a lot. It's funny because you mentioned like playoff performers and like the closing lineups, the playoffs guys that could project a stretch for. I thought ex immediately of Fleming. Like I'm high on him as well. I buy the 39% from three, like you mentioned. It's like a out of nowhere rise after didn't really think he would be this great shooter. 7'5" wingspan is definitely enticing. Again, I think if you're looking at fit, I think he would fit pretty well. If you do project Sar as a five, then I think Fleming could fit right there as well. Like you mentioned. Decent rebounders that are physical, have size, and could project a stretch force, alongside a guy like Sar. I think that could be a good little tandem there in the front court. I'm also high on Sorber. I know you shared your thoughts on him, but I think someone that I think could play more down low compared to Sar's. Sar's post game may be developing, but it's pretty non-existent at this point. He needs to get a lot stronger. I think Fleming does that a lot better than Sar. I don't know. A lot of people think he's going to be this really good shooter in the league. I'm not sure, but those are definitely guys that I can get behind in terms of those fours that you can kind of plug in there, as well. But I want to talk about Clifford, because this is a guy, like, I think if he was 20 or even 19, he'd be way higher on a lot of guys' boards, especially if you're a Wizards fan looking at it from a Wizards perspective. They like to take these 18, 19-year-old players and extend how long they could possibly be under contract for in the league for. I believe Clifford is 23. Like he's quite old compared to the regular prospect, but man, can he get to a spot? I mean, he can score the ball. He's very good. So like what does that age do for you and your draft grade with a guy like Clifford?
I don't care at all at 18. I think I'd be a little more focused on that at six and a guy that's got the most potential upside. But like how old was Zach Edey in last year's draft? And he had a very good year this year for Memphis or another Memphis player. You look at Jalen Wells, like something about a guy that can come in and just immediately fill a day one role, I think is valuable for teams at any part of the draft. There are guys that I think are a little higher on my own sort of personal pecking order for things, but I wouldn't be mad at it. And some of it's about role and development timeline and things like that. I've mentioned Cedric Coward. The quote I've liked from him, I thought was really interesting, was they asked him like, "Oh, were you just like an undervalued guy, or they missed you in recruiting?" And he said, "No, I just sucked at basketball up until a couple years ago, and I worked real hard." Like, that just happens for guys sometimes, and not every sort of development path is one to one. So I think you do your homework, you find out, some of those things. Like I've heard, like, oh, we could take a Carter Bryant because he's so young. Well, I mean, he'll be almost 20 on draft night as a freshman. Derek Queen will be 20 on draft night as a freshman. So it's not one size fits all. Somebody's 23 isn't everybody else's 23. So you look at his development path and his track record, and also you just need solid NBA players at a certain point. So if you think you can be that and you can get him at 18, you just take it.
Sure. I'm aligned with that. I could add, but you said everything perfectly. I think that's kind of the range of prospects at 18. Like maybe someone falls and the Wizards could say, you know what, I want to package 18 and 40 and something else and move up. They have like 30 second round picks. They have a lot. So like they have ammo. They have other first round picks. If they really like someone at the back end of the lottery that falls, maybe go for it. That's something I could see. But if they stay at 18, I'd be completely content with a guy like Fleming that I think projects quite well and could play well sober as well for me. What do you think about Nolan? What's your overall take on that? It's a pretty polarizing prospect, I feel.
I have no takes on the international guys that didn't play some level of college basketball, just because I haven't seen them enough to have like an
Sure.
educated perspective. The very little I've watched, I kind of don't get it. Because I've had people respond to our show and say, why didn't you talk about him as a guy at six?
Six.
I just didn't see that kind of thing personally. But maybe there's something more there if I got a little deeper into the film there, where I don't remember hearing your perspective on him, Greg. I don't think you were overly high from what I remember.
I mean, six is outlandish. Like at 18, I could get there. I could get there certainly. I think the upside's well. A lot of people don't think he's a good shooter. He shot 40%+ over his last 10 or so games overseas. Like pretty good defender. I see it. But it's not someone that I would even think about in the lottery. I think 18 is good if you want to take a upside prospect at guard. I think at worst he's a pretty solid NBA defender. Like I think Dante Exum had really limited offensive game when he came into the league, but he was good at defense. He has the wingspan to do so. So I don't think you want to draft someone like that high. I mean the experiment didn't really work out for the Jazz. But at 18 I could get there. And there's a lot of like I could ask you who they should take at 40. I think if they traded this, I would really not be shocked at all. They've done it the last couple of drafts. Instead of that, I'd ask, is there your guy that goes to a lot of college basketball games, that watches a lot of college basketball, is there a guy like consensus isn't that high on, but like you're like, how? Like he's that good, and like maybe you take him at 40, maybe you take him at 18, but you are just really high on a certain prospect.
We just did an episode of our show about these kind of guys. I like a couple of the older dudes in this draft. An Eric Dixon, somebody like that played at Villanova. He's probably in the 40s or 50s on most of these mocks, but if he's traced Jackson Davis plus a 3-point shot, like you could make an argument that he's the best shooter in the draft as a big, and like not the best shooting big in the draft, but the best shooter and a big. That player is valuable to me. You see a guy like Quentin Post or one of these guys that aren't crazy athletes, but they're just productive because they're smart and they work hard. I think that's a guy that if he was like in a rotation for a playoff team next year, it wouldn't shock me. Even if you look at a Keyshawn Johnson, someone like that that went undrafted for Miami, like I think he's a better version of that kind of day one.
Yeah, I like Dixon. He was good at Nova. He's a pretty solid player. I think in that 40 range, I like to take. A lot of people like to take these like high upside prospects. Like, oh, they could be Jokic, but I'd rather just take someone that I think is going to be good. Like that's where I don't really care about age. Like if you take a senior, if you take a 22, 23-year-old, then sure. I think that the Wizards can do that. I think they have so many draft picks that that's okay if they're willing to do something like that. So that'd be
Maybe
good.
one more, Greg. I was just thinking about it. Like, Cam Jones is sitting at 35 on this
Thank you.
consensus mock draft. Like, I think
Took the
maybe
words out of
we're
my mouth.
overthinking that one a little bit, just given the role that he had to play this year. Yeah, the numbers fell off, but he's just insanely productive. And yeah, I could see him being a long-term NBA player.
I was literally about to say at 40. Like I
Okay.
would be fine
Okay.
with Cam Jones. Sion James from Duke. That's like the guy from Duke that nobody talks about, but he was very, very good for them. Somebody like that I would be able to get behind. In that range certainly. But that's gonna wrap it up for today's episode. Thank you so much, Matt, for coming on. As always, You can find Matt on the Believe in Wizards podcast. Department of Hoops, I can't recommend more. Like, if you like Maryland basketball, if you like college basketball, please subscribe. They do amazing, amazing stuff there. Bulls Forever as well, where you can find my work and Matt's work. Is there anything I missed that you want to plug? Twitter, anything?
No, you're the man. Appreciate you, Greg. Keep following Greg. Keep promoting this young guy. Well, he's got to carry the Wizards torch here for the next 40 years for us. So keep up the great work.
Thank you. Thank you as always, Matt. Thanks for joining me, and hope you guys enjoy the episode. Go Wiz.